the Initial Reaction podcast is trying to steer clear of the lightning this week, as week one football games were interrupted, delayed, postponed, all sorts of... It was just a weird week. It was a weird start to the 2016 football season. Let's talk about it. I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers.
I'm J.B. Gnorin, checking in from our Friday Night Lightning report.
Can't endorse that one, but it was an interesting effort.
It was. If you want, you can bolt right out of this podcast.
Oh, you had a plan
before,
B.
Before it gets too electric.
No, stop. That's it for now.
That's it for now. A weird week one. It was really weird. There were a lot of games on Thursdays. Normally there's just, you know, one or two. And then not to mention there was a Packers preseason game, which you would think all the schools would elect to have their games on Fridays, but some of them even chose to have it on Thursday for seemingly no reason. And then you add in Friday night weather, and I was all out of sorts.
Thursday night turned out to be a very fascinating night of football. You had the Homestead Arrowhead Tilt, which has kind of become the premier non-conference game in the area. That took place on Thursday. You had a 50-43 overtime game where Brookfield Central survived against Whitefish Bay. I think we looked at that game and thought Brookfield Central would be the heavy favorite, but they definitely needed to work for it to get the win there. And then Greendale and Menominee played a 45-40 game, which normally a score like that would not be the third most important or exciting game of the night, but it kind of turned out that way, where that game lasted a long time. There was a little lightning moving in that didn't quite get there in time, maybe foreshadowing for what was to come on Friday night. But Thursday was really interesting all by itself. And then Friday, you had a number of games that were paused around the halftime mark. Some got played again on Saturday. One got moved to Sunday. A couple, as we tape this on Monday, have not finished yet. They're going to be finishing on Monday. A couple got wiped clean from the books. At least one game went final at halftime that they are keeping, at least right now, in the win-loss ledger. So I'm really actually confused why some games did things differently, but it was crazy. My game, I stayed for four quarters. There was no problem whatsoever. But just depending on where you were, I have to get lucky.
Rub it in.
Yes, you went to more than one game. Certainly, you went to multiple games. Tell us about your wild and crazy adventure.
First of all, you saying that one game finished. That's weird because there's one game I was at, and I'll get to it. A game 2 miles down the road finished. The other one didn't even get to halftime, and the stadiums were literally 2.3 miles away.
How does that happen?
I have no idea. I think different vantage points of the Lightning. All right, we'll get there. So my Friday night started with a city conference game, because usually they have early games. I don't know why they've had them for years. I'm sure there are lots of reasons, but anyway. Went to Bradley Tech, Milwaukee South, because that was officially the first game on Friday night, kicked off at 6 o'clock, and instantly got drenched, just soaked beyond belief. I had such a weird day of, I was in a golf outing in that morning, not saying it was a hard day, just saying it was weird, where I got very, very wet with rain there, too, and so then I had to go into work, and I was all, my brain was frazzled, you know? And so I didn't, not once did I think, oh, I should probably grab a jacket for the rain in the forecast today. I just didn't think that for some reason, so... Anyway, so I go to that game and get soaked, and then I go to the South Milwaukee versus Sussex Hamilton game, and I show up and my camera does not work, will not turn on. The battery life is good, it goes into the camera properly, just will not turn on. So, turn around, head back to work, grab a new camera, head down to South Milwaukee. Turns out I missed 0 minutes, well actually no, I missed about 55 seconds of playing time, because they were in our area's first lightning delay.
An excellent timing by you to leave just before the delay starts.
Yeah, and I know the athletic director at South Milwaukee just from interacting with him throughout the years. I told him it was very nice of him, but he did not need to hold the game for me. It was very
nice. Oh, you're
nice,
so clever.
But he did not need to do it. Anyway, so that was my first taste of Sussex Hamilton. What stuck out there was their lineman, Calvin Dassau. I'm going to go with Dassau.
Yes.
He's a monster. He is absolutely enormous. He's one of those guys where you look... And Hamilton and South Milwaukee are relatively big schools. They have, you know, relatively large rosters with kids who turn out to be, you know, of good size. Yet you scan the field and you look at him and go, oh my goodness, because he is that. So he is a offensive lineman committed to Northern Illinois. I got to watch him just a little bit. But I didn't stay for a long while because my next gig was over in Wauwatosa, in your hood, for Tosa East versus Tosa West, which was just delightful over at Hart Park.
It was delightful, was it? I do enjoy the atmosphere down there, but that game was not particularly close, so what was so delightful about it?
It was delightful to have a rivalry game. It was East versus West at Hart Park. Now, when I got there, it was also not delightful because they were in a lightning delay. So I showed up. First of all, I showed up to a steady stream of cars leaving the parking lot. And I knew that there was a delay, but now this game get canceled? Did I just drive up here for no reason? Turns out, no, they were just in a lightning delay. With a minute before half, Wauwatosa East had the ball on like the 6-inch line, too. And they called, you know, the lightning delay. So I'm sure that was not very fun for them. But
right. Anyway,
showed up to that just to get some rivalries, another game. And then that's the one where 2 miles away, Marquette was playing Wisconsin Lutheran at Wisconsin Lutheran College. The Tosa-Tosa East game got to finish while Tosa West crushed Tosa East. The Marquette-Wisconsin Lutheran game got suspended until Saturday with a minute left in their first half. So just some weird reason. And when I was driving from Hart Park over to Wisconsin Lutheran College, I could see the lightning in the distance. And I was like, okay, well, this Marquette game is only going to last another couple of minutes, if at all. And it turns out they saw lightning a couple minutes later, and they suspended the game until Saturday when Marquette ended up finishing the job.
I think if you could levitate a little bit above Wisconsin Lutheran's football stadium, if the hospital weren't there, you could see Hart Park pretty easily. So that is very amazing that the two games had such wildly different outcomes based on the lightning.
Yeah, so it was weird, but basically for my whole, 8-year career at Time Warner so far, I've only done one game a night. A lot of TV stations around the area try to go to as many games as possible. They try to show their presence and say, look at how many games we went to. And I just kind of see through all that crap of just, you're not covering it. If you show up for a touchdown and then leave, you're not covering a game. You're just getting a clip. And so I've always been of the mindset of just getting one game, doing it right. But this week was just kind of different because it was week one. It was kind of my story that I did for Tomorrow Sports Weekly is football is back, that we've waited a long, long time for this. And there's different schools, that are supposed to go to state, like Marquette, Wisconsin Lutheran. There are schools that will not be going to state and might not make the playoffs in Bradley Tech and Milwaukee South, but kind of a football is back everywhere motif that I was going for.
Yeah, you talked about Cal Dasso going to Northern Illinois. Yeah. I was at a game. I saw the Greendale Menominee game, and it's pretty easy to identify the linemen that are considered D1 kids. Menominee's got a kid named Alex Fenton who's going to Wisconsin, so easy to pick him out. I actually think there's a kid on their roster who's even bigger than him, so that's kind of fun. Matt Henningsen of Menominee Falls is another name. Tyler Beach of Port Washington who's going to Wisconsin. There's always a healthy crop of decent offensive linemen from the area. So as I was playing the game where I was identifying which kid was the big kid for them, I saw a kid from Greendale who didn't even have the name on the back of his jersey. They usually all do. And he looked like a player. He was a 6'5 receiver, and I watched him in warmups, and I thought, well, that kid has got to be good, but he doesn't even have the name on his back of his jersey. I don't even know if he's a varsity kid or a JV kid, and I looked on the roster. He was a senior kid by the name of Zach Harrison for Greendale. I had not heard of him before. And he played in the game, and not only that, he caught 2 touchdowns, including the first of the game, which went for 70-some yards, where he fought off a defender that was called for pass interference on the play, and he kind of, pushed him away and wound up going to the house. Turns out this kid's a first-year senior just a first year in football. He's kind of a basketball kid.
I was going to let that slide, but all right.
First-year football player who didn't play because he was a basketball guy the first 2 years, broke his hand as a junior, so didn't go out for football. And a heck of a player. They would not reveal to me why the name is not on the back of his jersey. I'm sure there's some secret reason for that, whatever. But a very exciting part of that game, that 45-40 game, was just the crazy amounts of offense. And Greendale had a big lead, and Menominee came back, and it got really interesting at the end. And it was a very fun start to the year. And then Friday I went to Maguanago, which, like I said, did not get suspended by the Lightning, one of the few games that didn't. We talked about the difference here between two places that are pretty close by. It was just crazy the number of outcomes that you had. You did have games that finished at like 11 o'clock at night, yep. And you had games that were suspended and games that were canceled. I mean, just really a weird sort of cacophony of outcomes to really start off the season on a strange foot. And I don't know if it was just, I don't know if it's just week one or whatever, but a lot of games weren't reported right away to the WIS Sports site, which is sort of the typical home base for stats and stuff. Some had really crazy stats that were wrong. Some had just bits and pieces that were wrong. And I don't know. It was a very bizarre night, very Twitter ready night, because that was about the best place to get information for everything that was going down.
Yeah, we had one of those games. So the West Dallas Central Whitnall game is the one that got postponed to tonight, and that was the one that we had on our air. So that was definitely weird. Just because
that one is finishing on Monday. That's finishing Monday night.
Yeah, we didn't have a full game on our air, which I don't think has ever happened to us before. So that was kind of weird. And yeah, like you said, some games finished Saturday, some today, and I can't imagine being in that situation. I can't imagine going home Friday night, not having won or lost or tied a game, and then showing up the next day, showing up Monday, already losing like 10-3. Like, you show up to a game losing. I just can't imagine what that was like, and how you prepare for that, and what tape do you go over, and what game plans do you change, because you don't know enough. Like the Marquette Wisconsin Lutheran game, they didn't even get through a full half. You know, how do you know what has worked and what hasn't? Maybe it didn't work that one time, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to work for you. So just a very, very strange night.
And the surreal feeling of going from a night game where you're surrounded by inclement weather, the Oconomowoc Kettle Moraine, the skies just opened up there. I mean, it was crazy downpour. In addition to the lightning, they come back on a sunny Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock to finish that game. It's just, yeah, it's almost like a backwards game where you've got the first half weather in the second half. Very, very interesting night.
You know where you can find some great pictures from that game?
I have a guess.
MyCommunityNow.com/push?
Yeah, that's the place to start. I've got a link. The push is now moved to the Gannett site. It's a more lengthy address. We're going to work on that for you. But right now you can find a link there, or just visit any of the either Lake Country Now or My Community Now. You can find a link to the push, which has a full rundown of at least the games that have been completed so far, of what happened in week one, some of the top players, some of the upsets, some of the outcomes, as well as a few other stats and a few other bells and whistles as well. Go ahead.
So what do we know after 1 week, almost 1 week, because there's still a game or two that isn't even complete? Like, I just feel like, and again, this is part of the reason that I did my four games instead of one, we don't know who's supposed to be good this year, aside from, you know, penciling Kimberly into the sectional finals probably. We don't really know anything. Like, even a team like Arrowhead, who I believe will be very, very good this year, lost their quarterback for 4 weeks with a broken collarbone. It's kind of like, what do we know now?
I would say that injury, as well as possibly a lengthy injury to the Catholic Memorial returning running back Josh Carfanta, would be at the top of sort of any storylines that we glean from the first week. There is, to me, a little bit to be learned, because Franklin, I think, is a good example of a team. You just don't know where that team is going to be, because they graduated so much. They were an excellent team last year. I would argue that they were the best team in the Milwaukee area last year. They didn't go to state. They lost to Arrowhead on a very crazy close game, but I would argue that was the best team in Milwaukee last year. So they lost to Maguanago. They've got five sophomores starting, and you sort of learned, okay, they're not as crisp as they usually are. But from what I saw, I thought, they're just really just a few, you know, catching a few balls that go their way on, like, defense from winning that game, you could argue. So I would say that there has been a drop-off. It's not as bad, though, as maybe I guess I thought it could be. There are teams like Homestead hanging with Arrowhead like they did tells me that that team is not going to be reloading at all. I'm really more impressed with some of these close losses. Like Kettle Moraine really giving Oconomowoc everything they could handle tells me that Kettle Moraine is going to be better than I maybe thought they'd be. And that's in a league that doesn't need any more talented teams, because they already are going to have six or seven teams that can battle for one of the really four playoff spots.
I was surprised Waukesha South lost to Nicolet, though, right?
That's probably the biggest story, that Nicolet, that's the first time since September of 2012 that Nicolet has won a football game. That was huge. And yeah, it's not a good sign for South, but it's also a very uplifting thing for Nicolet. They got a new coach, Al Marauder. They're really just trying to get anything going. And even if that's the only win they have this year, and I don't know if it is. I wouldn't say that necessarily.
Yeah.
But even if it is, that's a big moment for Nicolet.
I think I didn't cover that last win, but I think I interviewed them shortly after. If I'm thinking of the correct year, I went there when I think Nicolet was 2-2 to start the year, which was enormous progress for them.
Yes.
And I think I went and did that story. And so that's nice to know that I killed any hopes of them getting back. Crap.
Probably the most beleaguered program in the entire
Milwaukee
area.
I mean, I talk about this with anybody who will listen to me, that building a program is tough, not because, like, listen, you can have whatever goals you want. You can take whatever steps you want. But in order for you to go up, somebody has to come down. In order for Nicolet to go up in the North Shore, Homestead, Cedarburg, well, I can't even think of teams anymore. Where's my
brain? Whitefish Bay and Germantown.
There you go. Those four. One of those four have to go down. And until you knock one of those guys off and probably get some more help, it's just not going to shift. And the same in the Classic Eight with Arrowhead, Catholic Memorial, Waukesha West, Muskego. Even a great team like Mukwonago, as we know, has trouble. So it's... That's a problem with Nicolet, is that you need so much to go right just to break even, just to get to 500, and you just feel for those teams.
I would say the North Shore is going to be interesting this year. I really thought Port Washington was going to be and is going to be a team that sneaks into a playoff spot. A little surprised that they needed overtime to beat New Berlin West, who kind of is sort of perceived as one of the lower half teams, lower third teams of the Woodland West. Cedarburg not showing well against Hartford, going down 28-0. I'm still confused if that's a loss or a no game, because that ended at halftime, but that tells me Hartford's going to be way better than we thought in the Wisconsin Little 10, and that Cedarburg may not be as good as we thought in the North Shore. Then there's Whitefish Bay, which goes the other way. Thought they'd be rebuilding this year, but they take Brookfield Central to overtime in a 50-43 game with a first-time quarterback slinging the ball all over the place. Some of the best numbers of any quarterback in the area, that being Cade Garcia. I mean, now, what do you think about them? I think, well, they've got to be in that mix. Homestead's a lock, pretty much, in my mind, to make it to the playoffs out of the North Shore. I honestly don't know. I can't say safely who I know the next teams are out of that conference.
Yeah, and so now, I mean, Brookfield Central, I believe, plays Hartford this week.
Yes,
so
that's a Thursday night game. Huge game.
Yeah, so I think, like, I've kind of pegged Brookfield Central as my dark horse. I haven't told them yet. But I think, like, they could be really, really good this year. I don't know much about them, but I know that Jed Kennedy is their coach, and I know that they were a good team last year, and I know that that's a big win this year. So there's a chance there.
I actually picked them to win the Greater Metro, so
oh,
I don't know
so
if I'd call that a dark
horse.
They are my actual horse. Now, I think it's a three-team race with Marquette and Brookfield East, which isn't a huge surprise. Those are typically the three teams near the top. Pretty impressed with Sussex Hamilton's handling of South Milwaukee, although it's a little hard to compare there. But Central has a running back named Zach Heckman. That's a new name relative to what we've had in recent years. He racked up a whole bunch of yards yesterday. He ran 43 times for 190 yards and 3 touchdowns. So he definitely put his name on the map. There were a lot of – that's kind of where we get – the first week is interesting when you see these, like, breakout performances from guys whose names you maybe don't know yet. This is sort of the time where you're like, oh, that's a name, that's a new name, that's a new name. That's kind of what I like out of the first week. You really get a feel for who some of the top personnel might be, some of those juniors that were just sort of biding their time and playing behind guys who graduated that now get to step into the spotlight.
That's fun. I like that. You're smart. Yes. Anybody ever told you you're smart?
No, but I am smart. Thank you for noticing.
You're welcome. So there you go. That's week one.
That is week one. What do you have planned for week two? Are you, you know where you're going?
No, I don't know yet. I looked at some games, but again, I think it's one of those things where, you know, is it better to get a game where, you know, they aren't state contenders? You know, sorry to say this, but, you know, something like a Waukesha South Nicolet, is it better to get one of those games where, you know, it doesn't matter that they're 0-1 or 1-0? As opposed to a team, you know, like a Brookfield Central Marquette, which should be a great game. So I don't know. There's all these questions in my head, JR. I'm telling you, I don't know what I'm doing.
Very difficult life that you lead, JP.
It is. It is.
I think you'll probably figure something out.
I think so too. I'm pretty confident.
There are a lot of rivalry games that are probably going to go away under the new realignment scheme. So I suppose, like Pewaukee, Wisconsin Lutheran is an example. They play each other every year. Well, they're not going to starting now. Yeah. So,
and there you go. Homestead Arrowhead is one that's going away now. I think we talked about that last week, but you were talking about one of the marquee non-conference games. Well, not anymore. It's not going to be.
Yeah, so that maybe is a little bit of a storyline, but I know some. I think the Woodland sort of kind of gets into conference play this week, and there'll definitely be some intrigue in the second week. But really, things truly get going in that third week when the conference season begins in earnest for everybody.
There you go.
Are you? We don't have to talk a lot about the Brewers, but I had this experience.
Oh, bring it
today.
On! Let's.
I had this crazy experience where it like. 12 in the afternoon or 1 in the afternoon, I legitimately was looking up information about tonight's game, thinking that we're going to attend it maybe as a family, and I did not know that they won yesterday. I was watching the game, and I turned it off with Keon Broxton batting, first batter of the ninth, and I was sort of waiting out as that bat because I've enjoyed watching him swing lately, so I was sort of just waiting, and I saw a few pitches, and I remember the last pitch was just a ball in the dirt, and I turned off the TV, and I went outside, and I played with my kids, and I honestly did not even check to see if they won or lost, because I had assumed they had lost, and then I find out, and it takes me until like 1 in the afternoon to realize they won. This is an experience I have never, ever had before, and I don't want to say it's apathy, because it's sort of just... I would say a deferred fandom. I'm just not into it at all, but it is just so weird cheering for the Milwaukee Brewers this year.
You're not wrong to think that. They were 0-59 when trailing after 8 innings prior to yesterday. They do have the lineup that they do. I mean, they're not an offensive team right now. They're certainly not a pitching team either. You had every right to believe that they had not led during any inning of their 7-game road trip. They had trailed or were tied for 62 straight innings before coming back in the ninth. So you're not wrong to think that way, sir.
I watched the highlights. What a game of inches. Chris Carter's home run goes out by such a razor-thin margin that he's standing on second base waiting to hear what the call is because it wasn't clear whether the fielder had come down with it as he sort of got dinged up on the landing.
I was talking about it this morning when I was guest hosting on Lucas and Dawson. I'll be doing it again Thursday morning from 6 to 8 on the Big 920.
Ooh.
The Big 920. I'm such a radio guy now, the way I'm able to just rifle all that off. Anyway, the point is... we were talking about it this morning, and the rest of the year for the Brewers. I mean, I know that you are, without a doubt, a hardcore Brewers fan, even though it's killing you this year. You are a big Brewers fan, but I don't know where Brewers baseball is going to take us for the rest of the year in terms of Packers coverage and high school football coverage and everything else that's going on. It's just, like... It's almost like it's going to be begging for attention that I don't know if it's going to get... Do you? I mean,
no. I think the Brewers
short of following individual performances.
Yeah, I think we're done with the Brewers for 2016, and I think the reason that is for me now anyway is that I no longer believe 2017 has any hope, and you kind of go into this thinking it's a multi-year thing. Of course, you do. So it's not that I had huge expectations for 2017, but it's clear now without. I would say without even three guys that I could say I trust to be starting pitchers all year next year for the 2017 team, it's pretty clear to me that this team is going to be not a 500 team next year. And I really thought that they would have gotten at least to the point where they could be a 500 team next year. So I'm a little bit down on this year because it might tell me a little bit about next year, but if next year is a dead issue as well... What does that even really matter? I mean, now it's all about who they trade in the offseason and how they sort of make some of these small upgrades. And I don't know. I guess I just have nothing else to really look for right now.
Well, right now is different than the start of the year. At the start of the year, it was you looked up and down the lineup and the rotation and you said, who on this team is actually going to be on the team when it competes? And you said, what, Nelson, Peralta, Youngman, and Braun, and then Santana, and that was it. And those are the only players you were holding on to. Now, as you look at it, I think it's interesting because it's actually there are more players that you figure might be in the rotation, and rotation and lineup. However, more players have been lifted of that untouchable status. At this point, I think every single player on the roster, and I might even throw Arcia in there. I know that's a very quick rush to judgment, but. Every single player on the Brewers roster, I think, is tradable. I don't think there's any single untouchable other than, including Jimmy Nelson, Willie Peralta. I think everybody is tradable. So it's very weird, but yet you also see, you could foresee a scenario that there are six or seven guys on this roster right now that are part of your next winning team, right? Like, you could conceivably see VR, Santana, Braun, Carter even, and then Nelson, Peralta, Davies as part of this team next year. Yet, I would have no problem if they traded any one of them.
I think Davies is still untouchable, and I do think Arcia is for the foreseeable future, unless sure. It's like an Escobar situation where it's part of a larger mega deal, and obviously the Brewers aren't
it's Zach Greinke coming back.
That. Right, and the Brewers aren't in position to do that right now, so that's not happening, but I am, I think Davies has shown enough to be in that sort of untouchable class, not because I think he's going to be a phenomenal multi-year all-star pitcher, just because he is so, has been so poised and is still so young. There's just a lot to really like about his place for the next great Brewers team. So much that, and there's such a huge gap between what his value is in the future versus the next pitcher, because I would say Jimmy Nelson has gone from prospect to borderline, not a guy you want in the rotation. Junior Guerra has been very good, a great surprise, but he's 31 years old and there's no getting around that. He's just got a shelf life, you would think, especially as a guy who throws a splitter. And nobody else except for, I guess if you want to say Willy Peralta, has salvaged his season a little bit with the last couple starts, but there's nothing else there in the rotation that you say, yeah, that guy's definitely going to be a starter the next time that this team is good in 2018 or 2019.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I'm not done with Nelson yet. I still think...
No, neither am I, but I'm frustrated with him.
Well, obviously very frustrated, but I still think that he's going to get it together. I still think that, I mean, he's different. He's obviously different than Junior Guerra, but he's different than a lot of the other guys in that he was highly touted for the past 5 years. It's not like any of these guys, Taylor Youngman, who has come up and just all of a sudden like, whoa, he's a good major league pitcher. He wasn't even good in the minors type deal.
Yeah.
Like, Nelson has been the guy that we've been waiting for a while. So I think that there is more potential with him that he probably is worth holding on to.
Yeah, I guess, and I know Jimmy Nelson himself has really sort of come to his own, you know, his own defense there, saying that there are a lot of outings where he's just been burned by one or two crazy unlucky hits or bad pitches or whatever. I look at this stat, FIP, F-I-P, which sort of weeds out all of that and just looks at the things a pitcher can control. And Jimmy Nelson is terrible at it. And I could go and explain all of it. I mean, Willy Peralta's terrible at it, too. He's worse, in fact. I mean, Taylor Youngman's even worse still. But he gives up too many home runs, walks too many guys, and doesn't strike out enough guys to offset those things. It's just a bad recipe. It doesn't translate. And also...
Sure.
We're at an age with Jimmy Nelson where he should be sort of at his peak. It doesn't get a whole lot better here.
Yeah, but if he turns a corner and goes out and kills it the next 5-6 starts, and then, you know, starts off strong next year and just keeps going, then it doesn't matter what his age is, because his age was correct that he, you know, he's just literally going through a slump right now. So,
well, that could totally be the case.
I don't buy that.
The slump has extended longer than just a few starts. It's all of this year, with maybe one or two starts as an exception. And really, last year he also had sort of a bad FIP. I mean, he has not demonstrated that he can be a shutdown pitcher. And he's 27 years old, so like, let's say he figures it out the rest of this year, which I have no evidence to say he will, he's 28 next year. Like, we're on the south side of what you can expect his best years to be.
Yeah, but I don't buy that. If he's 28 next year, you get him when he's 28, 29, 30, and 31. You know, that is still a prime age, I've been told. Not that I feel that way, but I'm told that is still a more than capable age of being an absolute stud, which it could be.
It is. It is absolutely possible. I just question whether we've seen the evidence that it's going to happen. I mean, in fairness to him, he was the most highly touted prospect in an organization that had a dearth of pitching prospects. I mean,
that is true.
He was held to a little bit of a higher standard than the guy he was. So he was a very effective pitcher in the minors, but it doesn't mean that he was going, anyone at any time said he's going to be the number one pitcher for some organization. I mean, I think he was only the number one pitcher here because there was nobody else to do that. So he's held to a little bit of an unfair standard that way.
Yeah, I guess being better than Jed Bradley isn't the ultimate deciding factor, is it?
That draft, the Youngman-Bradley back-to-back picks with Jose Fernandez in between, might be the worst thing that's happened to this team in a long time.
Oh, come on.
Well, okay,
it.
That's a reach. Just the drafts in general for that stretch were
you
really
wanna why?
Pretty bad.
You want to know why? Because they're really hard, all right? There's a There's a lot of teams that don't succeed at it. You know who else really didn't succeed? The Cubs. They traded away all their draft picks to get better draft picks from other teams, okay? Let's just pump the brakes on it, destroying the Brewers. For not to mention somebody that won, what, 13 games last year in Taylor Youngman?
Okay. Yeah, he had a decent rookie. He had a great rookie year. I would say that he exceeded every expectation as a rookie. That is confirmed. I will give you that.
What a disappointment.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a disappointment last year. I never felt that he – I always felt he was overachieving. There was no data to suggest that that was the pitcher he was. And I think what he's doing now, once he went down to Biloxi, is more representative of who he is. I mean, I think he should be – I think he could be a big league pitcher, maybe a bullpen guy or something. I just never expected what we got last year, and I had no expectations. I mean, it was like Jed Bradley. If he'd come to the big leagues, I'd have felt the same way. They both were somewhat disappointing in the minors. I wouldn't say somewhat for a first-round pick. They were disappointing in the minors. But obviously, if you make it and have a good rookie year, that's something. You can't discount that.
Now, if you want to talk about Eric Arnett, I think that's another story.
You've taken a perfectly
beautiful day where we were talking all sorts of happy thoughts about high school football, and you've ruined it. You did it. You ruined it.
Do you want to talk about the Packers? I haven't even been able to pay attention to the Packers because of all the high school stuff.
No, there's no reason to. Now you've wasted everybody's good mood on the Brewers.
Listen, let me then at least lighten it a little bit. How great has Keon Broxton been?
What, hitting 370 in the month of August.
What an amazing revelation he has been. And I was reading some stuff on FanGraphs that really sort of discounted the idea that he's just on a hot streak right now. That he's literally, if you look at the exit velocity, he's literally hitting the ball harder than anybody in baseball, including Giancarlo Stanton, Nelson Cruz. He's hitting the ball harder than them.
That's amazing.
His progress has been so marked that it's just so clear that he was overmatched in learning the major league game the first month of the season. He caught up very, very quickly and is now, I mean, is outside of Ryan Braun, is he the best offensive option they have on this team? Who says no to that? I think he is. I think he's their second best offensive player.
That's awesome. I'm not sold on him, but that's not through any sort of, you know, any sort of intention on my part. I would love to be sold on him. Bring it on. Keep it going. Somewhat related, another discussion from this morning. Chris Carter is on pace for about 35 to 40 home runs. And he's hitting 220. That's just interesting to me. I just find that really, really interesting. Because I was also really bad at baseball. So I'm curious how it works, how you can be so good at hitting the ball, but be so bad at hitting the ball. You know, and I get it that, you know, if you have a power swing, you're more prone to strikeouts. I get that, but that's fascinating to me how he can be so good but so bad at two somewhat similar things.
He's not even the only player to follow that arc. I mean, Mark Reynolds, who was here, is a similar type of player. And I guess, I don't know. Chris Davis of both the Orioles and the Brewers, although Chris Davis, the former Brewer, is actually a better average hitter.
Yes.
I wonder if people look at it like this. I have weeded batting average out of all my perceptions of baseball, along with win-loss record for pitchers. The other day I realized that J.A. Happ, however we say it, of the Blue Jays has 17 wins. And that blew my mind because I don't know who's got a lot of wins in baseball. I don't know those stats no longer even mean anything to me.
I agree.
Not that they're not completely worthless. They're just, I don't even look at them. Batting average is the same way. So you agree. Do you think people our age, like, does anybody look at batting average? Because I hear Chris Carter hitting 220, and that actually is news to me. I couldn't tell you what Chris Carter is hitting.
Yeah, he's a 220 hitter. I still look at batting average a lot. Win-loss, again, didn't succeed at baseball as a kid, so I quit baseball, and I kind of didn't follow it until I got hired out of college. And when I basically discovered that win-loss was a stat for pitchers, I was just absolutely blown away. I was like, this makes absolutely no sense. Why are we using it? And to that day, I don't use it. I just don't trust it to be any sort of metric as to how a pitcher pitches. So I don't trust that. And batting average is going away. They got rid of it at Miller Park. even David Stearns agrees with you. So
on the scoreboard, and he's not the only one. There are other scoreboards, and many. This is what I argue with Sabermetrics. The revolution was won a long time ago. We're still arguing about it, but it's foolish. Every front office has people who think in those terms. Batting average is not something that most front offices are thinking about ever when they're evaluating players. So I like that the game has kind of moved that way. I just don't know. Maybe I didn't know if that was common for to be like me, where batting average sort of has been erased from the part of my brain that cares about baseball stats. It just doesn't matter to me.
So how does this story end? Did you decide to buy tickets to the game tonight or no?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the game tonight. Why not? Because it doesn't matter how frustrated you are with Jimmy Nelson. Still going to watch him pitch and watch the Brewers play is a beautiful, beautiful thing. That park is a treasure. I love going with my family. I love being there. It's a wonderful place.
Aww, and you should go. Yeah, we should go sometime.
I agree with you. I occasionally can get pretty good seats, JP. We should do it.
Ooh, look at you humble bragging over there. What can we, what have your fingers been up to? What have you been typing these days?
Lots of high school football, as you might imagine. We've got video from the games I was at, Maguanago and Greendale, up now at Lake Country Now and greendalenow.com. The Push, we mentioned that already, is live on the new site. You can find links to that on those places where I just run down everything that's going on in high school football. My colleague Stephen Teets wrote a really interesting Olympic-themed story about a couple swimmers from Shorewood reacting to Simone Manuel becoming the first African-American woman to win a swimming gold medal, because they themselves are African-American swimmers, very talented as well. So he talked to them and got some reaction there. That is cool. Gwen Jorgensen of Waukesha South is a gold medalist in the triathlon. Huge, just an awesome moment on Sunday, or Saturday, I should say, to watch her win Olympic gold. Waukesha South with the Hahn brothers as well. They know how to get their Olympic medals done. That's a pretty interesting thing they got going on. So nice. So that's really cool. Got a story up about her and some photos as well.
Well, as I mentioned, I have my story from bouncing around the high school stadiums in the rain on Friday, so I like the way that turned out. There was this other team called the Packers that played a game Thursday. I don't know, blah, 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 I don't care. Dennis Krause has two stories on them. What else did I do? Oh, there are futsal courts in Glendale now. Did you know that?
I actually have heard that. I didn't. I've never been there. I don't know anything. I don't know how to get there, but that's interesting.
It's at the corner of Green Bay Avenue and Hampton Avenue, so in Lincoln Park, just on the north side of Milwaukee there. I referred to futsal as soccer's little brother in the story that I did. It's on a smaller court with a smaller, heavier ball, designed to work on your foot skills. It's moderately impressive if you look at YouTube clips of it online, and it's interesting. It's a condensed version of soccer, not like arena soccer at all. It is interesting, and so they took Keith Tozer, who is the head coach of the Wave forever, is actually the head coach of the futsal national team. There is a U.S. national team of futsal. He is the head coach of it. But so he found these tennis courts that were in Lincoln Park that were completely under repaired and under maintained and underutilized. And he went to the park system and they basically told him, if you can fund it, you can renovate them. And he did. He hired a company to resurface it, and he got advertising, and now there's two of them actually in Lincoln Park. So there's that story, high school football, and then the last thing would be Oscar Robertson, part of the only championship team in Bucks history, was back getting a Fellowship Open Award for his Legends Award for his work in the community and in the business sector and for young kids to look up to. So that is Sports Weekly, premiering Tuesday at 6 p.m. and running throughout the week only on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel.
Definitely check that out. Go to our sites. Visit us on iTunes and Stitcher. Shower us with your comments, your praises, your love.
Yeah, for that.
We will attempt to continue to be witty and wonderful and in your earbuds once a week.
Love it. All right, JR, good work today. I am proud of you. Get back out there. We'll do it again next week, okay?
Sounds good. Steer clear of the lightning storms, and we will talk to you again, JP. Thanks.
All right, bye, friends.